are at our second shiur on the topic of Ma'aser Ksafim. And just to review quickly, last week we discussed a number of important background, the framework for understanding Ma'aser Ksafim. Number one is the nature of the mitzvah, whether it's more compared to tzedakah or it's more compared to Ma'aser Ani. Just to review, just like a person has a farm, he takes Ma'aser Ani, he takes Ma'aser Rishon, he takes Ma'aser Sheni, so too we have to take Ma'aser on all the money, all the profit that we make, we take Ma'aser to din and Ma'aser. Or is Ma'aser Ksafim supposed to be some type of limit on how much tzedakah the person's supposed to give? I have tzedakah, I have an obligation to give tzedakah. So Chacham came along and gave a shir. How much tzedakah do you give? You give Ma'aser. So is it a din in tzedakah or is it a din in Ma'aser in general? I mean, so nafkaminas last week. One nafkamina just to say, who do you give the money to? If Ma'aser Ksafim is a din in tzedakah, so he said you're supposed to give it to Aniyim, because tzedakah goes to Aniyim. If Ma'aser Ksafim is a din in general Ma'aser, Ma'aser Rishon goes to the Levi. Ma'aser Sheni, I eat in Yerushalayim. It doesn't go to anyone in particular. So to Ma'aser Ani, there might be a little bit more, rather Ma'aser Ksafim might be a little bit more wiggle room what to do with the money. To buy it for mitzvahs or whatever else you might need it for. That was one question. Yourself, perhaps. We also discussed the level of the chiv, if it's a deraisa, if it's a derbanan, or it's a minag. We saw Shitas Tosos who said that the chiv Ma'aser Ksafim is a deraisa, it's based on psukim. Others thought that was only an asmach de ba'alma, it wasn't a real source. And others in the Bach, it said it's only a minhag ba'alma. And the Bach says it's a very, very strong minhag, but it's a minhag. And if it's a minhag, of course, there are many built-in kulas for that. So that's what we discussed last week. So let's pick it up from now. And that point of it being a minhag, and the fact that it's a minhag, which is the accepted practice that it's only a minhag, has a number of nafkaminas. One is, let's say your father, your family, has a minhag to take Ma'aser Ksafim and give Ma'aser Ksafim, then you would be obligated to also continue with Ma'aser Ksafim because that's your minhag. I will say, Nubiyadenu, that's your minhag, that's your family minhag. If your father stands up for Kiddush Friday night, so you stand up for Kiddush. If your father sits down, you sit down. If your father took Ma'aser, so you take Ma'aser. So if it's a minhag, that depends on what your family minhag is. If your family minhag is not to give Ma'aser, then you have no obligation to give Ma'aser Ksafim yourself. It would only be a minhag that you could opt in if you decide to. Let's say you live in a community that the community overall took upon themselves to take Ma'aser. So the same would be true, that you have to follow the family, the community, the shul minhag. Now let's say there is no minhag, but a person himself decides that he wants to take Ma'aser Ksafim. He wants to be machmir for the shita and to take Ma'aser. So then it could turn into a neder. Like any other minhag a person does, if it's after three times, it becomes a neder. Then he has to continue to do that minhag, that practice, unless he does hataras nedar. Or even after one time, let's say the first time he says, I want to take Ma'aser Ksafim. Moving forward, I want to be mekabel myself, the minhag of Ma'aser Ksafim. That is a neder that he has to continue to take forever unless he does hataras nedar. It's similar to a person, let's say, a person wants to be machmir for Shitas Rabbeinu Tam, when to end Shabbos, after 72 minutes. You want to take such a chumrah upon yourself. You don't have to, there's no obligation. But I want to make that my minhag. I want to take that chumrah upon myself. So that becomes a neder. And if I want to undo that neder, I need to do a taras adar. So for example, I keep Rabbeinu Tam, but betaras chumrah ba'alma. I don't take it as betaras minhag. So when I initially took it upon myself, I said, b'li neder, I'm going to try to keep Rabbeinu Tam. Now that means sometimes we'll finish in shul, usually not here, but in other shul, sometimes they'll finish before Rabbeinu Tam, Matzei Shabbos. And it's Kiddush Levana. So Kiddush Levana is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch that you're not supposed to say Kiddush Levana on Shabbos and Yom Tov. We don't do it Friday night. Rabbeinu Yonah quotes from a Tosefta that, why do we do rather Kiddush Levana Matzei Shabbos? Because we're Mevusam. We're dressed nicely or we have nice cologne or whatever Mevusam means according to the Mefarshim. So Matzei Shabbos is a wonderful time. We're all dressed up for Shabbos. Matzei Yom Tov, we're dressed up for Yom Tov. So we do Kiddush Levana. So why don't we do it Friday night? We're certainly dressed up Friday night. Okay, we're running home for the Suda. It's brought down in the Svarim, the Shulchan Aruch quotes it, we don't do this on Shabbos because I'll pi Kabbalah. Some Indian not to be Makabel Pnei Shechina on Shabbos. No Kiddush Levana on Shabbos. So what happens, Matzei Shabbos, if I'm still keeping Shabbos, the Rabbeinu Tam's not over yet, so I can't do Kiddush Levana because it's still Shabbos for me. So since I only keep it Betaras Chumrah, I end my Shabbos then, before Rabbeinu Tam, in order to be Mekai in the mitzvah of Kiddush Levana, to say the bracha with everybody else there, Barov Am Hajjus Melech. But if you took upon yourself the minhag as a Betaras Neder, then you can't just undo it like that. So same thing with Ma'aser Ksafim. A person wants to take upon himself Ma'aser Ksafim, say B'li Neder. In order a person, sometime down the line, he might not be able to, he might forget to, and you don't want to violate the Neder. So that's the best practice. Take it Betaras B'li Neder. Now we also discussed the Indian of Ma'aser. Ma'aser, of course, is 10%. So there is something brought down. We have in the first source here something called Chomesh. Chomesh is a fifth. 2/10, a fifth, 20%. So there is a brought down Shulchan Aruch that although we call it Ma'aser Ksafim, there's an inyan of taking a fifth. Where does this come from? So the Gemara in Ksuvos tells us, Daf Nun, that Amar Rabbi Eli, this is source number one, Be'usha Hiskinu, in Usha, this is a place many takanas were made in Usha. Those of you who've learned, Ksuvos has it a number of places in the sugyas in Baba Kama, talk about Usha. Many takanas were made in this place called Usha. One such takana is, Ha'mivazbez ayivazbez yoser mechomesh. A person who wants to spend a lot of money, don't spend more than a fifth of your money. And they bring a brisa in support of this, that a person should not, yivazbez yoser mechomesh shema yitzarech lebrios, because then he's making himself poor, and then he's going to live a certain lifestyle, and he needs to keep up to that lifestyle, and needs to rely on other people to help him out. Right, don't waste the money, because then a person, even, but if a person doesn't waste it, what's considered wasting? Anything above one-fifth is considered wasting, because you might need that. You need to be smart about how you use your money. More than a fifth is considered, again, putting a person's self in a very dangerous financial state, and he might end up relying or needing to rely on the brios. So therefore, a person shouldn't...
That's a harsh word, because if you have a shul, let's say, that's going to go down, they're going to lose the mortgage or whatever...
You're wasting your money.
Good point. So you're saying if it's not waste, right. The guy's a billionaire. Right. So a fifth of his money is a lot of money percentage wise, but he could still give away half the money and still. So a person who's very, very wealthy, the Shulchan Aruch talks about, then you could give a lot more money than that. But typically speaking, a person is not a great usher. He's
why would it be called a waste though? That's weird.
No, because for him, it's wasting for him. He's not in a healthy financial state. So that's a very good point, but they talk about if a person is very, very wealthy, he gives away half of the money, won't affect him at all, then you'd be allowed to. But typically speaking, a person shouldn't give away more than one-fifth. And the Gemara gives such a maisa that either Rabbi Kiva or Rabbi Yishaviv wanted to give more money away, and they didn't let him give more money away. So it's based on the pasuk of Akol Asher Titein Li Aser Asrenu Lach. This double lashon of taking maisa. You're taking maisa two times, so obviously one-tenth plus one-tenth is two-tenths. That's, of course, one-fifth. That's the source of a chomesh. This is the takana a person can give, but no more than a chomesh. So it's very interesting. The Shita Mekubetas there, in Ksubas, talks about how do you get a chomesh? Why do we apply a chomesh to Ma'aser Ksafim? What's the source of this? Why do they create such a takana? Every takana, every derabanan is kein deraisa tikun. There must be some source in the Torah. So how do they create this takana? So the Shita Mekubetas says, I'll tell you why. Because on a deraisa level, if I have a farm, I need to take two ma'asers. Every single year, I'm taking a Ma'aser Rishon. That Ma'aser Rishon goes to the Levi. And then the first and second year, and the fourth and fifth year, is Ma'aser Sheni. That goes to Yerushalayim. So that's two Ma'asers every year. And third year and sixth year of the Shemitah cycle, it's Ma'aser Rishon and then Ma'aser Ani. There's always Ma'aser Rishon, Ma'aser Sheni, or Ma'aser Rishon and Ma'aser Ani. There's always two Ma'asers that are being taken every single year. So two Ma'asers every year on a Deraisa level, when it comes to my tevua, my grains, my fruits, that's now being applied to Kesef, Ma'aser Ksafim, twice. Ma'aser Ksafim for the Ma'aser Rishon, and Ma'aser Ksafim for the Ma'aser Sheni or Ma'aser Ani. That's the source of the Ma'aser.
It's not really two-tenths. Because the first tenth comes off the top, and then the...
Very good. So you must be a math guy. No, they talk. And he asks this question. He does ask the question. They address it. The Gemara itself asks this question and says, "Look at the last line. I didn't read it. The last line, very good." He says, "It doesn't make sense." Halo dami isur basar lisur kama. The second one's not the same as the first one. So and he says, "No, in Echnami, you're supposed to keep it the tenth anyways. Keep them to be the same. You're supposed to do a tenth. Let's say a guy has $100,000. You take 10%. You give $10,000, and you take another $10,000, even though it's more. But
close
that's
enough.
Exactly."
Ma'aser Sheni is not really charity. You
right.
Have to keep it for yourself.
Right.
Grant, 100%.
How is that a model for
Takanas
Usha?
Same thing we said before. Ma'aser Ksafim isn't necessarily tzedakah either. Ma'aser Ksafim is either a din in tzedakah or it's a din in general ma'asros. Any revenue you have, you take ma'aser. It's a special. Ma'aser Behema doesn't go to the Ani. Ma'aser Sheni doesn't go to the Ani. Ma'aser Rishon goes to a Levi who may not be an Ani. Only Ma'aser Ani actually goes to an Ani. So it's not a din in charity at all. We'll see, we're going to go into next week, that what you're allowed to use Ma'aser Ksafim for doesn't necessarily have to be for Aniyim. That's the Chakira. Okay. So in light of this, so the Shita Mekubetzik explains how we get the Din of Chomesh, because again, Ma'aser Rishon, every single year there's two Ma'asos that are being taken. And in light of this, he actually brings the Nafkamina, which again, I don't want to focus on today, what you use the money for, but he does say if the first Ma'aser can be used, since it's Ma'aser Rishon, you could use it for your family. For your own needs, and the second half, which is Ma'aser Ani, you could use to have to give to Aniyim because it's a din in tzedakah. So there's a difference in the nature of both Maisrim if you're taking Chomesh. So that's a din in Chomesh. So there's Maisr and there's Chomesh depending how wealthy, how comfortable a person, how generous a person wants to be. How exact does a person have to be when they're taking Maisr? So firstly, we have to keep in mind this whole thing's a Minog. Even though some say it's Deraisa, others say it's Derbanan, we assume that it's a Minog. So once it's a Minog, how careful do we really have to be in calculating exactly to make it a Maisr? So it's a machlokes in the poskim. The Knesset Gedolah and Pischei Tshuva have such a discussion, how exact you have to be. And some say you don't have to be so exact. You could estimate, that's fine. It's very hard to be very exact. Going through all the different accountings and the taxes and the health insurance, we're going to discuss some of these a little bit this week, a little bit next week. It's very hard to get very exact. So just a rough estimate would be sufficient in order to accomplish to be mekayim the din of Maaser Kesafim or Chomesh. But the Pischei Tshuva says, no, there's a din to be very exact in order to accomplish Maaser. In order to accomplish Maaser, you have to be very, very exact. If I have a Maaser Behema, so just you have to get every tenth. There's no, like, you can't approximate. Right. You have to count. Yesterday, right, Rothwack spoke in Shal Shud. It's a beautiful drasha he gave that in order to get Maaser Behema, you count one, and then you count two, and you count the tenth animals. Maaser Behema has to be very, very exact. And he gave a great, great idea how to, people have a hard time giving Maaser, hard time giving tzedakah. So he had a whole Maaser how a guy came and didn't want to give the, we learned this also on Friday in the Erev Shabbos Kol, we discussed this in Gemara and Chagiga. So a person has a hard time giving Maaser. So there was a guy, a Rav, did he quote which Rosh Hashiva this was from? I don't remember which Rav this was.
Yeah.
He did. Who was the Rav?
Rabbi Gordon.
Rabbi Gordon it was? So Rabbi Gordon was collecting money from someone, and he gets to the guy's house, and he asks him for a large sum of money, $100,000. And the guy says, I appreciate you think I'm doing very well, I'm not doing that well. He says, do you have a mission in Bechoros? So he brings him a mission in Bechoros, and the last mission, the last parak of Bechoros talks about Maaser Behema. And he takes out a Mishnah, and he says, the Mishnah describes how there's a pen where all your animals are in the pen, the sheep, and there's only a Pesach to allow one sheep at a time to come out. So he counts one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine are all mine. Exactly. Right, one for me, two for me, three for me, four. He has nine animals. The tenth one he doesn't care about, so take the tenth one. When you count that way, that you first take the nine for yourself, and you give away the tenth one, what's the big deal? It's so easy to give away Maaser that way. But if you view it as like, overall, I have $100,000, I need to take $10,000 for my money, that's a lot of money to give away. So you do one, and two is mine, three is mine, four is mine, five is mine. It's a much easier way to look at things. But either way, we see from Maaser Behema, you have to be very, very exact. There's no way to estimate how much I'm supposed to take. So maybe a guy has, let's say, grapes. I have a big lots of vines and trees of grapes and apples and wheat. How do I count every single grape? So you're supposed to estimate as best as possible. So you're trying to be very, very exact as best as possible. That's what the poskim really advise. But again, keep in mind, it's only a minug on Maaser Kesafim. And it's a machlokes whether you have to be exact in the first place. So don't make yourself crazy when you're calculating how much Maaser to actually give. Now, not everybody has to give it. I personally, if you want to know, I don't give Maaser Kesafim. A few years ago when I was in Kolo, I asked one of my rebbeim, I said, should I give, how much money should I give for tzedakah? He says, you're giving enough. I said, you don't know how much I'm giving. What do you mean? You have to first know how much I make, how much I'm, he says, whatever you're giving is fine. Because it's a minhag, because I was in Kolo at the time, so I didn't take Maaser Kesafim, I still don't take Maaser Kesafim now. Maybe I should. But I'm not telling you guys what to do at all here. I'm just telling you what the halacha is. Those who want to follow it, this is the process in following it. So it's best to be as exact as possible for those who want to be mekayim, this din. So let's go through some of the, there are really three parts in taking Maaser Kesafim. Number one is, what type of revenue requires Maaser Kesafim? Then after you've calculated that, what kind of deductions can you take off? Taxes, do I have to take Maaser pre-tax, post-tax? And the third question is, who do I give the Maaser Kesafim to? So today I want to discuss what you have to take Maaser from, what type of revenue, what type of gains. Next week I hope to talk about deductions and where to give the money to. Okay. So firstly, the first area to look at is any gains a person makes. Any gains, any profit, any revenue a person makes, of course, would require any taking Maaser. Now, how do you define a gain? A guy invests $500,000 into a business, and he sells it for $1 million. So do you take the Maaser on the $1 million that you walk away with, or you take away the difference? He invested $500,000, and his gain is only $500,000. So there's a discussion in the poskim, but the way we poskim, of course, is you only have to take Maaser on the difference, the $500,000. The amount of money that you invested into the business does not require Maaser. You take that, that's a deduction you're very easily able to take. Let's say a guy owns stocks. He owns real estate. So you don't take that money until you actually sell it. The guy's stocks are going up and down. Mutual funds are moving. You don't have every single moment, at the end of the day, how much you made that day and start calculating Meister. Obviously not. It's not until it's actualized until you sell it. A guy owns real estate.
It's called a realized gain.
Realized gain, okay. So, and that's not until you actually sell it. The real estate, that guy is real estate. He has an apartment building. He has a house. And if it's going up and down in value, you obviously don't have to take any Meister until the guy actually sells it. Then that's when you would take the Meister, when you make the actual gain. Now, the very complicated part of calculating how much a person makes is inflation. So a person could own a house or a building 50 years ago. Someone's telling me there was a big landlord has posted in his office his first rent he collected for $12 a month. So that was maybe for the grandfather, maybe 60, 70 years ago. So obviously there's a lot of inflation and the real estate market went up as well. So you have to start calculating when they bought a building for $50,000 and now sold it for $10 million 50 years later. So do you have, is that the gain, the $10 million to $50,000? There's inflation, how valuable the dollar is. And the overall real estate market, what do you attribute to the real estate market versus the inflation versus the value? Very, very complicated. And Rav Moshe writes that if a person really wants to be very, very exact in calculating Meiser, you have to weigh how much is towards inflation and how much is not. Now, I don't think there's a real way to calculate that. It's very, very unclear how to figure that out. But I wouldn't make yourselves crazy, but that is something to take into account as well, if you can, the inflation. Just throwing it out there, it makes things very, very complicated, though. So we're going to.
The tax authorities look at it that the $50,000 is your basis, let's say, and you're making $450,000, whatever the money that you're making, that's what you made.
You never took
mice on any of that money going up.
But that's not necessarily considered all your gain, because the dollar also went down in value. The dollar then versus what it is now is not really a gain on my end.
But it's all things being
current dollars.
What? Right. So I'm saying, so you have to take into account the inflation. Again, it's complicated. I'm not giving it economics. I'm not Roy to give an economics class at all. But this is something else to consider. If a person knows how much is due to inflation and market value, then that's something to consider as well.
Can I ask you just something that you just said previously? Let's
sure.
say a business realizes a profit,
mm-hmm.
right? And the profit's there. It's not a question of whether it's going to go up or down, but it's staying in the business to float the business.
You mean reinvesting it, you're saying?
Staying, yeah.
Right.
So you did a deal, the money's staying there.
Right. So this thing we'll discuss next week a little bit more, but let's say a person that sells a business or makes profit and he doesn't want to take it to himself as a salary, or he wants to reinvest
it. It's his business. Continuing.
So if there's a point where it was actually his, but he decided not to take it, but just leave it into the business, if there was a moment where in theory he could have taken it out.
But any time, it's his business. I mean, it's...
So he could always, but it's not anything until he actually sells it. I mean, what's the case?
You buy something, you sell it, you made $10,000. It's in the business. You're not taking it out yet because you're only taking out every week $1,000.
1031.
So the rest of the money, no, not even 1031. And then the next week he makes another $10,000, and the next week another. So the actual money is staying there. It's his. He could take it out whenever he wants. But he's just leaving it there because he doesn't want to pay taxes on whatever it is.
Which he mm-hmm. lose,
so. Right. So this gets to a point of.
Taxes on that, even if it goes back into a business.
Right.
Eventually, you're going to have to pay taxes on your business. So okay. you're going to get to a net number of profit. Whether you take that profit out of the business or not.
There is a profit.
The way I always learned is that you don't get mice on that money because you're that money is still in your business. Although, you get to a net number.
It's annual versus monthly.
Right.
You get to a net number. And then if you take money out of the business, then you have to give mice on that money because you're taking that money out.
Correct.
The same as the IRS.
So, I mean, that's my understanding. I don't know. I guess
same way that Uncle Sam doesn't have to bother you if you're not bring it back into
right. Only if a guy actually realized that gain does it become a chiva meiser. Now, what you're saying about monthly versus annually—that's a discussion. When does a person have to take meiser? Does it every paycheck he receives, if it's biweekly, however often he gets it, or do you do it at the end of the year? So, a person really could give meiser whenever he wants to give meiser. At every paycheck, he could take out 10% or 20% and give that to wherever he wants to give it to, or he could look at it at the end of the year. Now, the best thing to do is look at the end of the year. The reason is, if the guy is on the salary, a set salary, it doesn't make a difference when he gives it monthly or annually. The guy has a number of different businesses. He's buying and selling businesses. So let's say he makes a huge gain in the beginning of the year, and then he takes Meister on that. But then in the end, he loses a business and loses a lot of money. Are you allowed to take that away? You gave, without the numbers, he gave $10,000. He sold a business for $100,000. So he took Meiser and gave $10,000. Then he lost the business and lost $50,000.
Because he didn't give Meiser.
Right. So did he remove, can he remove that loss from the extra money he gave in the Meiser?
Wait.
So again, he took $10,000, gave it to Meiser in the beginning of the year. He lost money at the end of the year. Are you able to say, I gave too much money in the beginning of the year, let's just equal out, and next year I'll give less Meiser? That's the shaila that comes up in the postgame. So once a person decides in his mind to give Meiser on a certain business, that's done. It's in the history. Even though he made a loss later on, it does not impact what he did in the past. So the advice they give is one of two. Either wait till the end of the year, pick any date you want. Some advise Rosh Hashanah, it's a nice. Others say January 1st, the end of your calendar year, whatever calendar year you use, the counting year. Pick that one day when all your businesses, revenues, losses are all together, and figure out the aggregate of everything, and then decide how much Meiser you have. That's the safest bet. This way you can balance everything out, as opposed to giving everything in the beginning and then losing. The other option is, again, either picking one day of the year. Let's say a guy wants to give Meiser monthly because he doesn't want to think he owns that money and have to pay the 10% at the end of the year, right? Just like taxes. A guy rather pay taxes up front as opposed to realize he owes $10,000 at the end of the year. So a guy wants to even now giving Meiser monthly, but he might lose a business later on. It's going to affect his Meiser earlier in the year. So they suggest from the Chafetz Chaim to do as follows. A guy sells a business in the beginning of the year. He says, listen, I'm planning on giving Meiser now, but my intention is that it's going to be my projected revenue for the entire year. Right. So I'm projecting the year I'm going to make a certain amount of money. So I'm giving $10,000 this month, knowing that I might make more money the coming year. I might also lose money. So in that situation, having that in mind when you initially give the Meiser in such a way, then you can balance it out by a loss. So the guy, let's say, is expecting to pay $10,000 for the entire year. That's what he thinks he's going to make. If he makes $100,000, he'll give $10,000 right now. But he's not really sure if he's going to make that. But he makes a nice gain in the beginning of the year. So he gives $10,000. He ends up losing money at the end of the year. He really only owed $7,000 of Meiser. Right. But he ended up getting $10,000 in the beginning of the year. Right. That means he's really owed $3,000 of, he paid extra. That surplus can be carried over to the next year, and he already gave $3,000. So now year two, let's say he owes $7,000 in Meiser, he already paid $3,000, he only required to pay $4,000. So that's the best advice. Whenever a person gives monthly, or however frequently Meiser comes in, think of it for the overall, the entire year, the future, what to keep in mind. Okay. The other discussion, what other types of gains does a person have to take Meiser on? Health insurance. Many companies, many employees will get health insurance. Do you have to take Meiser and health insurance? I don't have to pay for it, or the employer is going to subsidize, pay for some of this health insurance. So the post can point out that that's also viewed as a certain value. There's a gain. If I would have paid health insurance anyways, and they're paying for some of it, $1,000 premium a month, let's say. So they're paying half of it, so I'm only paying $500. So I'm gaining $500 of them paying for half my health insurance. That would also be considered a revenue, a benefit that requires my Meiser Ksufim.
What happens if you wouldn't take any health insurance, but by reversing the fact that you happen to be working for them, you're required
exactly
to use their health insurance?
Right. See, if a person would not have bought health insurance, he does not have to pay it if he's being forced to take it. But let's say a person, this is a question they talk about, let's say a guy would have paid for a cheaper type of plan. But the plan that his company's offering him is a higher, more premium type of plan and more expensive, but it's a better plan. He would have been fine with a cheaper one. Do you have to pay? What do you have to pay? Do you have to pay what you would have otherwise paid,
yeah,
or what you're actually paying?
Yeah.
So that's a discussion that you find in the post-scheme as well. Again, I'm not sure how common that is, because usually a person goes off on his own. Health insurance is going to be more expensive than if you go through a company. The companies usually bring it down by having a larger plan. It's going to be a better health insurance plan. I'm not sure how shaykh that is.
They have what's called a cafeteria plan, and they take the money out pre-tax.
Right.
So, you have to calculate that benefit on a pre-tax basis, not on a post-tax basis.
Exactly.
So it's good. Half of your premium, in reality, is a gain for you.
Right.
Right? 50% of your premium is a gain, because the company's paying for half of that premium.
So. It gets very complicated. I have good memories when I used to work at PwC, all these different things. Pre-tax, post-tax, the premiums.
Why can't you look at that as just a perk? Let's say you get a $10,000 watch. as a bonus at the end of the year. It's a perk.
Oh, so we'll talk about gifts.
Pay, yeah, you have to pay.
We'll talk about gifts in just a second. But perks are also, that's considered a gift.
So
who says you don't have to pay on
it's
perks?
It's benefits.
And still, so now, so let's talk about matanos now. So in terms of gifts,
Yeah,
exactly. So a bonus, a person makes a receives a monetary bonus, so you have to take maaser in that as well. If it turns out to be a gift. So when it comes, right. So if it's something that is not monetary but has a value, but there's no, it wasn't, it's not money. So then there's machlokas in the poskim whether or not you have to pay for that gift. Let's say a guy receives, you know, as a birthday gift, or even in the work, as a toy, or a game, or a watch. So some poskim say you have to assess the value and take maiser on that.
Even now
most
you wouldn't have gotten it anyway.
Ah. So some say, if I would not have bought that watch from, I never would have bought that watch for $10,000. So they gave it to me as a nice gift.
I would have bought $100.
So then you don't have to take maaser on that. Take maaser on $100. But if I would have bought it otherwise, so some poskim say I have to assess the value of that watch and I would have to take maaser on that. That's what some say. But most poskim say you only have to take maaser on actual money that a person receives as a gift, not actual objects. You don't have to go through that process. But again, if you want to be machmir and be yotzi every shita, so then such a concept exists.
And the same would apply if I just met a guy. He had a real estate deal. He was supposed to get a bunch of money. The guy said, I don't have it. He gave him a $300,000 boat. So he got a boat instead. You have to now give, I guess it's the same thing. You'd have to give maaser on the value of that boat.
Yeah, again, according to some poskim. Some poskim say you don't have to give maaser on objects.
No even if it's instead of payment. It was mamish instead
of cash.
Right, right.
It's hard to assess the value because it's a car. There's a value of buying the car new. And then once it's been off the rent, it's already second-hand value.
Right.
But then if you're going to sell the boat, then you've turned it into money.
Actually, Sandy ruined it and he got the insurance money instead. So Mustami took it.
That's a good... I saw this in the Tzidkot. Do you have to pay on insurance money that you receive from Hurricane Sandy or any other type of insurance? You have to pay money on that.
Yes or no?
Right. Right.
It's the wrong neighbor to ask that.
You had a cash.
Right.
Figure out the value of that cash. And if you got more insurance than the amount to be captured, then that difference would be.
Right. That would seem to be correct. A person, let's say, had a big loss, Hurricane Sandy. I was one of them. So the insurance company, depending who you had, it gives you but I got a lot more money than I probably needed, to be honest. So they give you extra money. So do I have to now calculate what it would have costed me and what it would have costed me and not? And,
The reality is that insurance companies are very good at figuring out how much money they give. Your replacement value plus inflation and construction costs and the market you're in, all that is factored in.
Right.
It's really a replacement value that they're giving you.
It's very really it's what you paid for.
But Jay, is that any different than
it's
the
what
house?
You paid for in the premium.
But that's no different than the house.
I agree. Everything evens out. My premium ends up paying for myself.
What's the better question? Is what if a lot of kids believe that they need to pay Meiser on the gifts that they get from the wedding?
Right, so the same thing here by the insurance.
So we'll get to that.
That you really should talk about.
Going back to the insurance.
Yeah.
Is there any difference?
What do you mean?
Say if there's Tos Akum, is there a difference?
So there's a different discussion, Tos Akum. Let's say there's a mistake. No, so Tos Akum is a different discussion. Am I allowed to keep that money when it comes to Tos Akum? But it's still a gain for me, though. It's still a gain. So, right. Which now leads to me another Shiloh. Let's say a guy finds lost money. I think it came a year, 2 years ago. It was in the news. There's a firm guy. Yeah, very good. There's a firm guy who bought a desk on one of these websites. And I think it was in Connecticut or something. They found, what, $10,000? Craigslist?
$90,000.
Oh, a lot more than that. And that was Meiser. So you found $100,000 tucked away in the back of the desk. And does he have to return it because of Tos Akum? That's number one. And number two is, does he have to take Meiser on it, even after he returned it? So in terms of Tos Akum, in terms of Tos Akum, so the Gemara says you don't have to return the money of Tos Akum. If the guy pays you too much change back, a guy gives you too much change, you don't have to return the money, but because of Chil Hashem, then we should. Now, even though they would never find out, there would never be a Chil Hashem, because of a Kiddush Hashem, we strongly advise one to return even Tos Akum. You can't imagine how much Kiddush Hashem. There are stories how cities were saved in the Holocaust because they made a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. Yaakov Kamenetsky has a famous story where a Talmud of his, went to the post office and he returned back and they gave him extra change. So he asked Rav Yaakov, what should I do? He said, what do you mean? Return the money. So he returned the money. And then the second Talmud once came back and said, the guy gave me too much money. He went to Rav Yaakov, asked what to do. He said, return the money. And it turns out that this post, this officer there in the post office was testing out the Rav to see whether or not they would take the extra money or not. And it turns out that they were obviously returning the money. And he saved many, many Yidden in that community from the Holocaust because of that. He tested them out. And there are stories that they brought down in the side of the Shulchan Aruch. I forget, maybe the Knesset Gedolah has such a story. There's a famous story in one of the cities in Europe that all the Jews were the bartenders. And they got the Goyim drunk. And they always took advantage of all the mistakes of the giving extra money. They took them. And one time the Goyim got wind of this, that the Jews were taking advantage of them. And they mamash wiped out the entire town because of that. So even though Tos Akim Mikr Din is Mutter, if you ask any sensible posek, they'll tell you to return the money no matter what. It's also very relevant for all the Dan's Deals things, people who follow Dan's Deals and the mistakes and the flights, those who travel to LA. Those some nice deals. Can you take advantage of the mistakes of the websites? Are you allowed to? So it's Tos Akim. They made a mistake. Could I buy a $50 ticket to LA or not? So these are shilas.
They honor it.
Granted. They're different. I'm just saying that's something to consider. I'm not saying it's asur mutter. And even if you return the money, it wouldn't be kiddush Hashem. They don't know who you are. You're just not taking advantage of it.
That's different from what you were saying with the bartenders. The bartenders, they created the toast.
No. They gave extra money back. They gave extra money. The goyim gave money. It wasn't that they were creating the toast. They gave extra money.
They didn't get the right change. Apparently they wiped out the whole town because they got wind of what they were doing.
They're taking advantage of the Jew. They're taking advantage, right?
They were doing. Right.
Either way, let's go. Let's not toss Akim. We'll do this another time. Toss Akim. Let's discuss Meister Ksufim now. So the guy says. The guy says he gets extra money. So now this is his Mikra Din. He's allowed to keep the money.
Yeah.
And according to some, you're not allowed to return the money. It could be Matnas Chinam. You can't give free gifts to Goyim. So now it's his. He decided to do a tremendous kiddush Hashem and return the money, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. But it was first his money. So he might have to pay $98,000 or $9,800, $10,000 of Meiser he should pay first because this is his gift now. He just earned it. And then after paying $10,000, he returns $100,000. The guy's at a loss now.
Right.
So that's something to consider. So I would, I'm not sure if he consulted anybody on this case, but that's something when a person finds money, lost money, then you have to take Meiser. That's considered a gain as well.
Rabbi Kamenetsky's email this week for the Shabbos email was a seamstress did a dress for a poor person. A poor seamstress did a dress for the rabbi's wife. Mm-hmm. The thing. And then when she found out that this woman didn't have a dress, he gave the poor seamstress the dress to give it to her for her wedding. And then the rabbi said to his wife, you got to pay her for all the work. He said, but I gave her back the dress. He said, no.
Very good.
You got to pay her for the dress.
There's a shaila I heard recently. The guy lent a lot of money to a friend of his. And it was a number of years, and they never turned their money back to him. So the guy says, you know what? It's been a number of years. There's no way I'm getting the money back. I'm mochel on him before Rosh Hashanah. I'm mochel. The next day, he gets a call from the friend. I have the money. I want to return it to you now.
Oh, boy.
So in his mind, he was miyayish. He wasn't expecting it at all. So normally, as a loan, a loan's not considered a gain. I'm getting my money back. But this guy, he was miyayish completely. He wasn't expecting to get paid back at all.
Was there a star?
So number one, no star at all. No star.
It was a gift.
Yeah, it was a gift to him. Now it's a gift. So does he have to take Meister on this? So there are two questions, actually. Now, question one is, does he have to tell the guy that I was ready mochel on it?
Yeah.
And number two is, when he gets the money, he has to take Meister on his own money now he's getting back.
So
what's
that? So once he's miyayish, because it was a poor so you need to take 10% of the 10% that you originally
got. 10%, say that again?
The use that he did,
right.
Does it count against Maser?
No, he's miyayish, she doesn't expect that $20,000 at all. It's done.
He's asking, is that considered charity?
Doesn't it count?
Is that considered charity?
Because this is charity.
What is
he owes 10% of the
10%. It's a good question. It's a good question. Very good. I don't know. Very good question. This is I don't know. I wasn't asked. I was told about the shaila. I wasn't asked about it. I think he's supposed to tell the guy that I was mochel. It's reminds me of a case of the mission at the end of Shavuos. The last parak in Shavuos talks about Shemitas Ksafim. Shemitas Ksafim comes. If you don't write a prizbol, so you don't owe the money. The loan is batal. So let's say the guy wants to return the money anyways. He feels very guilty. He's, borrowed a lot of money. He wants to help the guy return the money. So you're supposed to say, the Mishnah says, it brought down the Gemara in Gittin as well, still meshamid ani. The guy said, the bank says I'm mochel, right? Meshamid is already done. The guy says, still afal pikein, I want to return the money. So then you can accept the money. But you first have to tell the guy that you're mochel, you're meshamid ani. So here too also, I think the halacha would be, you tell the guy I was mochel. If he wants to return the money anyway, so then you could take the money, but you have to take meiser on that money.
Most
he
people are
advised. He hasn't realized any type of gain.
It is. No, it was. It's a gift. Yeah. It's a monetary. We have 4 minutes. Let's finish. We have 4 minutes. I want to do one, two quick things. Sorry. Yerusha, you have to take Meiser in Yerusha. When a person gets, that's also considered a gain. And the last thing I want to address, something that Ben was talking about, something a little bit similar, not to wedding gifts, but let's say a parent is supporting children. Mom is completely supporting the children. Do the children now have to take Meiser on the money that the parents are giving them? So it's money. The problem is, if they take 10%, the parents have to give them more money now. So what the post can say is, you cannot be machmir on yourself at the expense of your parents or somebody else. Because I want to be machmir on the shita, this minog of the Bach, so I could be a great yid and follow the halacha, so my parents pay more money for me. So that the post can say you can't do that.
Is an ani allowed to give tzedakah?
Ani has to give tzedakah. It's a chiv, everyone.
But when you go back to the Gemara Ksuvah, Salivazes, the reason why is because Shemin Starach Labrius. And this reason, so then you're making people give you more money because
No, that again, the chiv tzedakah is a different discussion. That's a shlish of a shekel every single year, the Gemara says. Just a shlish of a shekel. So that's not going to really impact much. He's yotzei the mitzvah tzedakah. Meiser, no. Meiser, there's no chiv to anybody.
So then is he allowed to give more than the shlish?
Ah, so that's a discussion. I don't remember. It's probably, I don't know, I'm not sure the limit. For him, again, a tenth is nothing anyways for him. It's all percentage-wise.
Right.
But still it's something. It's still something.
When you're at that level.
So on light of that, I want to just close with one interesting idea for the, you know, remaining 3 minutes related to this last point of a person who's receiving money from his parents, he should not take meister. And the idea being that when a person should not be machmir and bein adam lemakom at the expense of bein adam lechavero. So I saw a beautiful piece in the Sefer Ber Chaim, Rav Biederman, about the inyun of drinking on Purim. And it's entitled about drinking on Purim. A person should make sure, although he's being mekayim to the utmost, the din, let's call it deraisa, of drinking and getting drunk on Purim, it shouldn't come at the expense of embarrassing any friends, of bein adam lechavero. So he brings a number of interesting ideas here, connecting to the balance of bein adam lemakom to bein adam lechavero. So he first quotes from the Avos Yisrael, from Vizhnitz, who's medayik that the Rashi Tevos of ad dilo yada is ayin dalad yud, which the Rashi Tevos is yada. Though a person is supposed to get to the point of adilo yada till he doesn't know between Haman and Mordechai, he still has to have some level of yediyah and being aware of his surroundings and not being mivayish and damaging anybody around him. You have to have the balance of adilo yada with yediyah as well. So then he quotes the beautiful Rav Shimon Sofer here. I have a number of interesting things here. When it comes to Kiddush Levana, we mentioned that earlier, we have a din of saying Shalom Aleichem 3 times to people. Very, very strange to say Shalom Aleichem when we're being b'makabel p'nei Hashchina. In Kiddush Levana, all of a sudden we start turning to our friend and saying Shalom Aleichem to everybody. He said, that's the idea. At that very moment where a person's mentioning he's being makabel p'nei Hashchina, laharos gedolos alav lezakos lios zahir b'chavad habrios, at that moment where you're being zocha to be makabel p'nei Hashchina, you can't forget your friends who are down here as well. You have to have that proper balance of the p'nei Hashchina, the bein adam lemakom, and of course the bein adam lechavero. And that's why he says also, one of the shitas of what's the earliest time you're supposed to daven Kriya Shema, Mishayakir es Chavero, Bedal Amos. What does recognizing your friend have to do with Shema? The remez is, even Shema, when we're being Mekava Olmecha Shemaim, you have to have that balance of being Makir Chavero as well. It happens to many people here, but just yesterday I was walking to my seat, and some guy is having lack of fun with this talus, and the guy whacked me right across my face, really hard. Didn't even say sorry to me. I don't know if he noticed. But that's like the classic example. Have all this kavana during the mitzvos and not caring about what's around you. So that's what he says. The Mishnah Avos tells us that Yehuda ben Tema Omer Havi'az Kanamer Kal Kineshir Ratz Ktzvi V'Gibor Kari. Person is supposed to be Kal Kineshir, very swift like an eagle, and as fast as a tzvi, as a deer. So it doesn't make any sense. A bird's much faster than a deer. So why would you go from the Kal Kinesher, then drop down to a Madrega below that, to Ratz Ketzvi, going from the eagle to the deer? And he says, furthermore, we don't find anywhere in Chazal that Tzvi, a deer, is fast. You find maybe a red, the Pasuk says, Naftali Ayala, that the ram is very fast. Naftali was like a ram, very, very fast, but never like a deer. We never find that Tzvi is fast anywhere. So he says, based on the Zohar, the following, that the nature, the Teva of a Tzvi, is when it runs, when it's running, it always looks behind. It's always checking behind when it's running ahead. It's running and checks behind it. What's behind it? He quotes the very last pasuk in Shir Hashirim, Baruch Dodi V'dam Lecha L'Tzvi. That my dear one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as he runs away from us, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs away, as we sin more and more, he always checks back, he looks behind us, checking to see what we're up to. So that's the idea. As HaKadosh Baruch Hu distances himself, really we're distancing ourselves from him, we're causing the averos, the distance comes in, and we're in this tremendous tzara, we're in great pain, we have to be, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, and we have to be Domei LaTzvi, who's always checking, Hamabit Tamid Me'achor, always looking behind us. That's the relationship we have with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. When he's running away, when we're running away from him, we're always looking behind to see if he's still there. Is he still looking at us? And that's the idea here as well, he says. When it comes to the Avodas Hashem, when we're flying like an eagle. We're soaring high like an eagle. And we're, you know, Kal Kinesher, we always have to be like Ratz Kitzvi as well. Always look behind us to the Bein Adam L'Chaver as well. We're flying. We're reaching tremendous heights of Bein Adam L'Makom. We're putting the talis on. We're being Mekabel P'chnei Shechina. We're saying Shema, but you always have to keep in mind what's around us. The Chaver, Ratz Kitzvi. Always look behind us. See the people around us. And that's the idea of drinking on Purim. You're supposed to get drunk to a certain extent, to take a little nap and be Mekai in the Mitzvah, but it's only as long as it's not the expense of anybody else around us. So that's the idea of Maaser Ksavim. Person wants to be Makbid and Maaser Ksavim, it should not come at the expense of one's own parents, of course, or anybody else. It should only come because it's working out for you. You want to be kind of Mitzvah Deraisa or Derbanan or Minog of Maaser Ksavim, but never, ever at the expense of anybody else. Okay.
Thank you.